Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report right before Christmas. I appreciate all of you joining us on this, what I'm sure is a busy weekend for all of you getting ready for Christmas and continuing on with the holiday season. We are going to mostly recap again what happened about a week and a half ago with the Fed pivot and the market reaction on the back end of that, and try to really look ahead to project what 2024 is going to look like, because there are still a lot of question marks, whether the markets are going to continue trending higher like they have for most of the year, whether the Fed is going to cut rates, and what that could look like carried over to a number of other markets. We are kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, let's start off with your comments on this Fed pivot. Yeah, the Fed didn't cut rates, but boy, oh boy, Jerome Powell's press conference, as we've talked about for the last week and a half, he came out about as dovish as he could have, and really, it seemed like tried to lock in the fact that rate cuts would happen next year, whether the economy drops out of bed or not, as long as data keeps moving in what the Fed is predicting, which is lower inflation and still a gradual slowdown in the economy. Jesse, what does this carry over for next year? Do you think that, A, we're going to be seeing rate cuts, and quite frankly, this pivot party, could it continue?
I mean, it's a great question. I think we first have to try and understand where this pivot was coming from. And to me, the greatest evidence that there was indeed a pivot came from Nick Timiraos, who's, you know, the Wall Street Journal reporter who covers the Fed, and who's the Fed has leaked information to him over the years. So he's, you know, he's probably the single greatest indicator of what the Fed intends to do. You know, Nick Timiraos asked Jay Powell about the dramatic loosening in financial conditions that we've seen over the last 6 weeks, which is one of the most rapid loosening of financial conditions we've ever seen. I think everybody, economists, market strategists, expected Jay Powell to push back and say markets have gotten ahead of themselves. It's too early to be talking about rate cuts, and basically just say the same thing that he's been saying for well over a year now, which is inflation is a problem, and we're focused squarely on making sure we bring inflation sustainably back down to target. The fact that he didn't push back, I mean, he said, you know, markets are going to do what they're going to do, and you know, he given that opportunity to push back against the loosening of financial conditions, and the fact that he declined to push back was a very clear sign that they're no longer focused on the inflation side of the mandate, or at least solely on the inflation side. They're becoming much more concerned with the employment side of the mandate. Now, what inspired such a rapid flip-flop? Because less than 2 weeks before that, he was, you know, publicly still saying that, you know, they're focused on inflation. It's too early to talk about rate cuts. So something in that 2 week period happened, and he changed his tune dramatically in a short period of time. So I think there's two potential things that I see. One is either the Fed sees rapid deterioration in the economy, they don't want to be late in addressing, or there's just, you could use the term fiscal dominance, which is something I've kind of been talking about for years now, which is the fact that the monetary policy discretion is just no longer there for the central bank. It's a far more important to meet the needs of the Treasury than it is to do the right thing for inflation or unemployment or whatever. Really, what that means is there's so much federal debt out there that needs to refinance over the next, you know, however many years, that if it were all to be refinanced at 5% plus, could cause big problems, could cause a debt crisis. And so the needs of the Treasury are such that interest rates have to come down because they just cannot be refinanced otherwise. One of those potential scenarios or things is probably what inspired the flip-flop. And I think it could be a combination of both, that the economy is slowing significantly and the needs of the Treasury are becoming a very serious, you know, you could call it the Fed's third mandate. It's, you know, you need to help fund the government.
Yeah, Jesse, let's dig into this a little bit more, because I'm sure from Janet Yellen's position, that's what she cares about the most, is making sure we can fund the government and the huge amounts of debt, if it's rolling over at 4.5% to 5% on the rate factor, is going to chew up so much of the money coming in just in debt servicing. But, you know, you bring it down to the smaller businesses, and you had mentioned off mic some of the NFIB reporting. But if you just think about it, a lot of businesses that are small businesses borrow money to cover payroll, to cover sustaining capital for their business, if they're going to do improvements or build onto their business. And they've lived in a world for a dozen years where they could borrow at near zero rates, at 0, 1, 2%. If they start seeing double digit loans that they need to do, that could really put a hurt locker on the small business sector. Do you think that's something that the Fed could be looking forward and saying, hey, this higher for longer may start crippling businesses we hadn't even considered?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the trend in bankruptcies, corporate bankruptcies, and a lot of those are just small businesses. And you know, bankruptcies are soaring. You see, look at credit card delinquencies, look at the trends in credit. And I think to be, you know, really believe in a soft landing, you have to think those trends are going, you know, which are all rising, right? We're seeing credit card delinquencies, auto delinquencies, all these things rising significantly, that these trends are literally going to just stop right there. I mean, that's what you hear from kind of the, you know, economic bulls right now, is that, well, these things are just normalizing, right? All these default rates got so low because, you know, we printed money and we put it in people's pockets. And so now we're just getting back to more normal levels. But I think it's really important to look at the trend, right? These things are all trending towards higher defaults and delinquencies. And I think if you just extrapolate that trend out and say, well, if these things continue, we're going to see higher, you know, defaults and delinquencies than we did during the Great Recession. And, you know, that's a big deal. So I think, you know, that could be part of what's going on as the Fed looks at, okay, it's not just the federal government's having a problem. All of these corporations and individuals, right? I mean, look at credit card, interest rates on credit cards and auto loans and mortgages and, you know, and all these things. And so, you know, if you believe that this trend is going to continue in delinquencies, we're going to get to a point where, you know, you cross that line into recession. And, you know, that could certainly be something Jay Powell's looking at closely.
Oh, absolutely, right? And that could be very much a reason why they want to start cutting rates, even, let's say, before a full-on recession hits, however they want to define it. But Jesse, can you dive into their dot plots as well as the economic forecast changes? Because it really seems like the Fed wants to follow inflation lower. And right now, if you look at some of the inflation metrics that the Fed looks at, where the Fed funds rate is, it's almost 200 basis points higher than some of that inflation data. Seems like the Fed really is expecting, first of all, inflation to continue to trickle down over the next 2 to 3 years to get down to that 2% level. And at that point, they want the Fed's funds rate about 50 basis points higher there. Where are the issues that you see, either in the dot plots, which are expecting about 3 rate cuts next year, or the economic forecast that the Fed provided us heading 2 to 3 years out?
I mean, I don't really pay any attention to the dot plots personally. They're always wrong. Right. It's good to know kind of what the Fed is thinking, you know, about those things, but they're always wrong. Right. I mean, you look back, go back to, you know, 2020, whatever, 2021, and they believed, you know, Fed funds rate was going to peak at 2% or something silly. And, you know, we're 5+ now. So to think that they know where the Fed funds rate is going to be a year from now is doesn't make any sense to me. I think the biggest thing that to pay attention to right now is the fact that Jay Powell did not push back against that loosening of financial conditions really opens the door for inflation to be a problem next year, to bottom out now and start reaccelerating. And the thing that, you know, we were talking about before we went on the air here is that you look at things like median CPI tracked by the Cleveland Fed, you look at things like sticky price CPI, and even super core inflation, which is the measure the Fed has pointed everybody to keep a close eye on. And if you just look at the 3-month annualized rates of these things, they're reaccelerating to the upside. So inflation has been pushed down by, right, we've had energy prices come way down, supply chains reopen, and this is all great. So goods inflation has come way down. But services inflation and wages are still elevated. And so the fact that the Fed is letting its foot off of the gas right now in terms of the tightening of financial conditions really opens the door to a reacceleration of the inflation problem at some point in the future. And I think you can already see it in housing activity. We've had interest rates come down on mortgages, you know, from 8.5 or something down, you know, well into the low sevens, I think. And you see housing starts pick up dramatically, you know, in the news this week. And that suggests to me that there is resilience in the economy and that it opens the door to a reacceleration to inflation on the upside. I think Raghuram Rajan, who is, you know, former central banker for India and warned the Fed about, you know, pre-financial crisis at Jackson Hole. I mean, he came out and said recently that before you'd even want to consider pausing rate hikes, you'd need to see wages come down much more significantly, a much more loosening of the labor market. And we're not seeing that. And so I think we might look back on this time for the Fed, like we look back at the transitory period where the Fed was saying, we don't need to raise rates because this inflation spike is transitory. Well, it turned out that that was a very bad misjudgment, one of the worst misjudgments in Fed history. And this could prove to be another similar misjudgment of the underlying inflation pressures.
Yeah, Jesse, it's really interesting how inflation was the prime target that everybody watched every month for the CPI readings, or we would look at the PCE deflator information that the Fed uses, and everybody was trying to parse what Fed policy would be. But they really made a point, not just Powell, but also Williams came out and reiterated this, and even Bostic reiterated this at the end of last week, that it's really about the dual mandate. You'd mentioned that earlier. So, you know, as far as the inflation side, it seems like everybody thought they're going to definitely want to keep it at 2% or below 2% for a period of time before they'd even consider cutting rates. And now they're saying, hey, look, we need to look at the employment situation. And Powell even said, you know, you're getting back to the point where both mandates are important. We'll be very much keeping that in mind as we go forward, kind of highlighting to the market that he wants to look at unemployment. He wants to look at the labor markets. He wants to look at the business side of things. Is there any other data you see on that side of the front, on the labor and jobs market side, that has you encouraged or discouraged?
Regarding inflation, I mean, I think, to me, I'm looking at the longer term trends. I think they're, you know, and I've said this for a couple of years now, everybody needs to go read, you know, The Great Demographic Reversal by Charles Goodhart and his co-author. His name is escaping me right now. But he talks about the demographic shifts that we're seeing right now that are a structural inflationary force, right? It's a shrinking of the workforce relative to the overall population. And it's this dynamic that is allowing for labor unions to have much greater control. We're seeing the greatest labor unrest that we've seen in half a century, right? You're seeing UPS workers get massive raises, auto workers, massive raises. I mean, across the board, airline pilots. And to me, this is a very clear sign that we're in a different environment than we've seen over the past 10, 15 years, where labor was really struggled and capital benefited, right? All of these companies were able to ship jobs overseas, you know, to China and production and everything, and that lowered their costs and really enhanced capital's negotiating power with labor. Say, okay, you guys want more money, you're fired. Now that's changing, where companies cannot shift jobs over to China anymore. There's too much geopolitical risk, and the cost benefit is not really there anymore in the way that it was prior. So we're seeing all this labor unrest, and to me, that's a very clear sign that we're dealing with a very different type of economy and inflation situation than we have seen over the last 10, 15 years. So I think that's why people like Rajan, you know, are saying that we need to see wage inflation come down and much loosening in labor conditions to have any confidence that inflation is going to come back down to the Fed's target. And there's literally no evidence of that. I mean, right, we're seeing job openings fall, but they're still above any prior highs. So there really aren't any signs that I can see that would justify the Fed backing off on the inflation side of the mandate as early as they are now. I think it's really important to keep an eye on that wages side of things, because that's where, you know, this inflation spike will potentially evolve into a wage price spiral, which would be the thing that really the Fed should have been guarding against and still be guarding against today.
So, Jesse, let's carry this over to the markets then. Look, the markets had a pivot party. They've been having a pivot party for the last almost 2 months. Some strong moves in a wide range of sectors, even with small caps playing a little bit of catch-up. Metals did well. Commodities did well. Again, it was almost across the board a flat-out pivot party. What's sustainable? What could continue through next year then?
Well, I think that if you were a precious metals bull, that Powell press conference would be the most bullish thing you could ever hope for, that the Fed is going to back off the inflation side of the mandate. To me, it was a huge green light for anybody who's interested at all in hard assets or anything like that, because it says we're going to let our guard down in terms of inflation, or we're going to err on the side of letting inflation remain above target. Now, if that's kind of how things play out and inflation doesn't come back to target, and that will make it really, really difficult for the Fed to cut rates in any meaningful way. And I think that's probably supportive of that higher for longer case. So I think you have to either be bullish on the economy. In that case, you're not going to get any rate cuts. Or if you're bearish on the economy, then rate cuts are going to come, but they're going to come because of a significant deterioration in the economy. That's not bullish for equities, right? Equities are discounting serious earnings growth for 2024. If you don't get that earnings growth, you have a big problem with valuations. And so I think that this pivot, while markets have interpreted as being very bullish for financial assets, I just don't see it. I don't think this is bullish for stocks or bonds, because it likely means inflation is going to stay high. I think maybe the most likely outcome for next year is some type of a stagflationary environment where the economy continues to weaken, not into recession, but inflation also stays high. And that doesn't really allow the Fed to really do much to support the economy. Now, stagflation is the polar opposite of a soft landing. So, if markets are priced for a soft landing, and I think they are, there could be real disappointment there.
Well, Jesse, just to that point, I mean, several people brought this up even over the weekend in missives, that it seems like a disconnect that the market is missing, that if they're excited about, if there's a pivot party because they're going to be cutting rates next year, they seem to be missing the point that if they're cutting rates next year, something else is going on in the economy that wouldn't be positive. And if you see an uptick in inflation and they can't really cut as much, that's also maybe a reason to have not partied so hard. So I mused over the weekend that could there be a hangover after this? And you had mentioned in a recent piece you put out that the market applauds the pivot party, that maybe it's premature for the markets to have rallied so high, because any way you slice it, either next year if it's stagflationary and you see oil higher and commodities higher, that's not good for business. Or if the Fed can't cut because inflation ticks up, that's not really good either. And maybe they partied too hard. So what do you make of the extremity of this move, and could it have gotten ahead of itself here?
Oh, absolutely. I think we're at a very important inflection point for the stock market. I'll just give you two data points, things that I track pretty closely. One is the small speculators' position in S&P 500 futures. They recently put on their biggest net long position in history. The prior record was in November of 2021, just before the market peaked and rolled over into the bear market of 2022. So these small speculators are usually on the wrong side of the market. I mean, very regularly on the wrong side, and they're record long right now. Flip on the other side of that, another thing I watch very, very closely is insider buying and selling. Corporate executives and directors, what are they doing in their own shares? And right now, we have these small, over the last 12 months, the smallest amount of buying I've ever seen on record. So insiders have zero interest in buying stock. And small speculators, who are, usually very good contrarian indicator, are buying like there's no tomorrow. And so to me, it's a very, very, from a contrarian standpoint, it's screaming, it's time to be bearish.
Jesse, is there any data, any market moves that would change your mind, that would change this kind of generally more economic bearish, more inflation spiking, and also more markets have run their course higher and are too high right now? Anything that would change your outlook early on next year?
Here's what I think the Fed should do. is they should stay tough on the inflation side of the mandate. And now I just don't think they can afford to, because unlike, you know, I think debt to GDP on Paul Volcker's time was less than, you know, 75% lower than it is today. So Jay Powell simply cannot be the second coming of Paul Volcker, even though that may be what we need in order to bring inflation back down. So I think we are in a new environment of, you know, and we've talked about this for, you know, a couple of years now, at least. We're in a new commodity super cycle, and it's going to be driven by this higher inflation cycle that is a structural, systemic issue. So I think if the Fed really wanted to address this, Jay Powell would have to make it very clear to Congress that the fiscal house needs to, you know, get their house in order and do the things to set the stage. You have to take short-term pain for the long-term benefit of the economy. Now, the fact that we're not willing to do that right now, Congress is not, and the Fed is not, Treasury is not, nobody is, right? I mean, Janet Yellen is focusing on T-bills right now, and she could have, like Stan Druckenmiller said a month or two ago, the Fed had a huge opportunity to sell a bunch of long-term bonds at ultra-low interest rates, and they passed on that opportunity, right? Nobody wants to do the right thing for the long-term health of the economy. Now, if Congress were to, you know, get its act together and say, we're going to really address the budget deficit, and the Fed is going to say, okay, you do that, and we'll be able to handle our side of the inflation side of the mandate, then I think you'd set the stage for a really beautiful long-term picture for the economy and for financial assets. But until that happens, it's really difficult, I think, to be bullish on financial assets. And I think from a defensive standpoint, you have to focus on hard assets.
Well, Jesse, just to that point on the hard assets, and there's a sector I'd love to get your thoughts on. I know a lot of our listeners follow along with that, and you do as well, and that's the energy space. Oil prices tie into really every part of the economy. They're a factor in freight and shipping, but they're obviously a huge factor in inflation. They affect consumers, they affect businesses, and it seems to have bottomed and had a rally here on this news as well. There's a lot of dynamics in the energy space. How are you looking at the energy sector?
I'm very bullish. I mentioned insiders a minute ago, and I just keep seeing insider buying in select companies in this space, which tells me, I mean, and it's really the only equity space where I see consistent insider buying. And that just tells me that they have a very strong belief in the long-term prospects for these businesses over the next several years, and they believe the valuations are very good. I think what we've seen in the oil market is the, you know, market's trying to price in a recession. And I think that's where oil has gotten. Oil price has priced in a recession. Now, so if you don't get a recession, then the oil price could just rebound really strongly about that. But if you do get one, then it's kind of already in the price. So I see a margin of safety in the energy sector today that I don't really see anywhere else. Part of that pricing in a recession is the fact that, you know, the Commitment of Traders report shows, I think it's the managed money and the non-commercial speculator side of that ledger are massively net short these commodities futures. So I saw somebody on Twitter suggest that traders in oil futures are betting on another, essentially like great financial crisis, another Lehman moment for the economy. That's the only way they're going to profit, being so heavily short the oil price today. Now, if you don't get that, right, if you don't get a financial Armageddon, then that means, you know, oil prices is oversold and due for a rebound. Just the short covering, like I said, if we don't get a recession, just the short covering and the sustained demand in oil is going to make for much higher prices. And so I think there are a number of things working in favor of energy today. Sentiment and fundamentals are just two of those.
All right, Jesse. Hey, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. Thank you for your time throughout this year. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a Happy New Year. Next year undoubtedly will be a very interesting one as we do again kind of what we did this year, wonder when the Fed is going to start cutting rates and how the economy and how the markets are going to react to it all. But boy, oh boy, there's a lot of optimism, at least in a number of investors in a number of different sectors heading into the new year, just thanks to this last couple month run. Jesse, again, thank you very much for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend and a very happy new year.
Thanks, guys. Happy holidays to you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.